Hello, everyone, and welcome to this sponsored podcast here on Risky Business 2, which is hosted by Vigabyte. Now, Symantec is the sole sponsor of Risky Business 2, which is how we can afford to put the show together and pay guys like our correspondent Paul Craig, who works for Risky.biz at various conferences around the world, recording talks and interviews. So in other words, without Symantec, RB2 would not exist. So big thanks to them for making this podcast possible. Now, as part of our sponsorship agreement with Symantec, we do these monthly sponsored podcasts where we have a chat to someone from the company about recent trends and news. And this week we're chatting with Symantec's Senior Director of Global Security Response Operations Group, which is a hell of a mouthful. And his name is Kevin Hogan, and we're talking to him about all sorts of things. We'll be chatting about the standardization of many forms of malware, weaknesses in the packers the bad guys are using, which is very interesting stuff, and heaps of other things around online threats. So I started off by asking Kevin Hogan if there was anything going on at the moment that was huge and newsworthy. Enjoy.
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, going back a couple of years ago, I could have reeled off a number of highly significant, at least from the perspective of media coverage, a highly significant sort of incidences when we're having the large-scale mass mailers and so on. Over the last at least 2 to 3 years, it's been more about currents and eddies than it has been about large-scale trends. Mm. Ultimately, once the financial imperative really became the driving force for a lot of the online, you know, criminal or malware activity, we haven't seen the real big headline sorts of issues. You know, you have your exceptions, you have your configures and so on. But generally speaking, where most of the variety and most of the challenges lie is largely, bar, you know, the few exceptions, in the area of vectors and how the particular malware, which generally speaking doesn't hugely vary, from a numbers perspective, you know, 95% of what we see is largely similar to other things that we see, but it's really the vectors or the various tricks that are used in order to obfuscate or hide what are, at the end of the day, you know, use once Trojans and downloaders, which typically lead then to further things like backdoors, info stealers, and so on being downloaded to a system.
I guess what you're saying there is that really malware has become somewhat of a commodity itself, hasn't it? I mean, there seems to be accepted standards by which you install, you know, a keylogger, by which you siphon data from a machine. It's almost become a little bit ho-hum.
Ho-hum insofar as the actual payload. Not so ho-hum and how that payload is deployed or gets onto a system. And of course, the impact of that payload is certainly not ho-hum from the perspective of someone who may have been targeted and actually ended up, you know, losing money or
yeah, it's all very ho-hum unless you're the one getting owned.
Exactly. Now, what I would say, however, and this is, I guess, where sort of I'm leading, is really in those vectors. And what we have seen as far as I would call a trend or maybe a current recently, and it's probably not lost on yourself, is the targeting, as usual, of browser vulnerabilities. You know, we've seen a couple of Internet Explorer zero-day vulns happen in the last month, and one Firefox one as well. So that's sort of ho-hum, although they disconcertingly, all three of the issues that I mentioned here were zero days. In other words, they were found and used in the wild before researchers or even the vendors themselves of the particular browsers were aware of them. So that's a trend that's been there for a while. But on top of that, now certainly over the last couple of months, if not maybe the last 6 months, Adobe in particular, both PDF file format and Flash files have been used as a vector very successfully with a series of, once again, zero-day attacks that leverage vulnerabilities in both of those, I wouldn't call them platforms, but, you know, heavily used file formats.
Yeah, not to mention all of the drama that we've been experiencing with Office files. And I said, look, I mean, one of the things that strikes me is that really around the Office file stuff too, I know that's tangential almost to what you're talking about, but really those Office bugs, a lot of the time, the reason that they're so effective is because you can get JavaScript to load up Word. I mean, have we thought, I mean, that is the case, isn't it?
It is. And interestingly, as you highlight, that is also the case with the large number of browser vulnerabilities that we've seen recently. It's all about getting or utilizing JavaScript to run on the client machine to do, you know, something for you, which typically is download or drop a downloader onto that machine, whose sole purpose then is to go back out to the internet and pull down usually further downloaders, which ultimately through an attack chain, as we call it, lead to a payload, which, as I'll talk about in a second, are designed to generate short-term cash in many cases and also long-term cash. By short-term, I mean we often see associated with these attacks misleading applications, you know, rogue anti-spyware installs, which I presume are probably designed to make money quickly, you know, through affiliate schemes. And then we also will see the longer-term cash play or you know, profit play, which is the stealing of information, which may be, you know, fenced or sold to a fence who will then fence that onwards, or directly sold by the individual themselves. But with the division of labor that we've seen in the whole sort of underground economy, I think our presumption is generally the people stealing the information are very often not the people that are leveraging it directly. In other words, they're selling it to someone else who's selling it to someone else who's then maybe actually accessing your bank to steal the money and so on. So there's sort of two things at play here. Now, some attacks seem to be focus solely on longer-term sort of profit-making, like those related to, let's say, the Trojan Clampy, which has generated some discussion recently. And then some of the ones that are maybe a little more everyday that we'd see, Ankata and some other threats like that, definitely do have a relationship with misleading apps and are certainly designed to make money quickly, if not also beyond that, try to make some money through, you know, keystroke logging, some other things, getting bank details, credit card details, and so on.
Well, I mean, do you know off the top of your head whether it's easy to prevent browsers like Internet Explorer from just opening up Word, you know, and Office files in the background and all sorts of file types? I mean, surely that seems like a pretty simple fix that would eliminate a lot of problems.
Well, you can specify to fair amount of granularity, certainly with the, you know, IE8, what you can and can't do with the browser and what sort of content you can and can't execute. The issue very often is not the functionality of the browsers themselves, it's the default configuration, because 95-98% of people who use browsers probably don't themselves go in and even understand what the various configuration options are, and even if they did, they may not change them. Now, of course, in Internet Explorer, you have the option of, you know, the low, medium, high sort of slider bar there to set the security. The problem is if you set that to high, you know yourself what happens. You find it very often.
You break everything.
You know,
right?
So many websites now rely on JavaScript and rely on Flash files and other things to simply work, and people want that rich media experience, as they say, and very quickly they realize, oh, well, they can't even surf their favorite sites unless they bring that slider bar back down to medium or even low. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a NoScript user, and it was a hell of a shock when I first started using it to just see how much JavaScript is out there. It's just hideous. Yeah. But I just wonder too, in the context of Enterprise and Internet Explorer 8, is it possible to make those sorts of adjustments to the browser settings through group policy? Is that something that CSOs and IT security managers out there should really be doing? Is that a mechanism that's available to them?
I don't even know. I don't know the specifics of the administration, how easy it is to remotely configure a browser. Obviously, you could do it through the vehicle of the company image, you know, that they, say, an IT department would deploy. You can, I presume, and I'm not the expert really, but you could lock down the browser in such a way in the image itself that you could possibly avoid some of these issues. That said, what I do know, because we do interface with a lot of enterprise customers, is I have very rarely ever heard that sort of policy being deployed or enforced in any way. Mm. So I'm sure as an option, it must be there. The problem is, of course, is that, you know, as from my day-to-day experience, I've never really heard of anyone actually doing that. Any of the really ultra-secure types of, you know, organizations that we would deal with typically on the government side simply don't allow access to the internet at all, and therefore, you know, you're having to go to a separate machine that may or may not have, you know, a lockdown browser, but in essence, that whole access to the internet is being denied, and therefore the browser is, you know, is not really an issue. But unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a lot of in between everyone having unfiltered access to the internet and complete, you know, filtered or no access.
Kevin, you mentioned obfuscation earlier when we were just discussing what some of the trends are. What are some of the techniques that seem to be gaining a bit of traction? Is there a sort of standard obfuscation technique that the bad guys are using, or are there a few different approaches?
Unfortunately, there's no standard, and it's the variety that obviously makes nicely put makes my job interesting.
I suppose if you're standardizing obfuscation, then it's not really obfuscation anymore.
Indeed.
Is it?
One thing that I'd highlight actually, and it's maybe not well understood, is two things I'd like to highlight is security technology, and people still tend to use the word antivirus. Even taking our own products, Norton Internet Security, for example, is a lot more than static file scanning. I mean, the industry has moved away from the sole reliance on that particular technology many years ago. And so therefore there are a number of different tools available to let's say a team like mine who is analyzing the malware and determining what we have in the product that we can use to detect, protect, or remediate a particular situation. So obfuscation on its own, let's say someone packing a file so that we can't easily view the inside of the file to pick out a particular snippet of text, a string, or other thing, is not necessarily an issue. If the packing is somehow either, usually a combination of both, consistent and unique. And maybe I'm giving away the game a bit, but consistency and unique are really the only two things that we would require to deploy effective content. We don't need to always see the inside of the file per se. Mm. And so, the obfuscation that you hear about, usually it's typically packing files and repacking them and so on with either packers that are solely used by sort of malware groups, which of course are unique, or even that are what we would call dual-use packers that are also used by commercial products.
Hackers using packers, who would have thought?
Yeah, indeed. we're not always necessarily, it's not always actually, it can be a help sometimes to pack. I'll go back, it's maybe about a year ago, but you probably recall the Stormworm, as it was called. Mm-hmm. It was heavily used or deployed in Europe in particular, although it did have a sort of a global impact as well. We called it PCOM. The PCOM group was a very, well thought through, relatively complex particular bit of malware, but they were a little too smart by half in that they created their own packer. Now, it was a very complex packer, but at the end of the day, it was also a very unique packer, and so far it was only used by PCOM. So we were able to put together a very effective set of signatures, not only AV, but also on the IPS side, that looked for the presence of this particular packer.
Instead of actually looking for the content, you're just looking for the method by which it's been obscured from view.
Consistent, unique. And if we know that this packer or this particular type of obfuscation is always associated with malware, or at least this type of malware, or this particular family of malware, that works for us just as well.
Have you been following the latest developments in mobile attacks? I mean, it's stretching it a bit to say mobile malware. We did see that one affecting Symbian, but it finally seems like, and DEF CON and Black Hat have just wrapped up, and there were a lot of presentations on mobile stuff, and they seem to be cool presentations where you could actually do something meaningful with the attack, as opposed to attacks from years ago where, it was a bit so what. Do you feel like the mobile thing is actually hotting up this year, or do you think it's still a couple of years out before we really have to worry about it?
It's, this discussion itself is very deja vu because, from roughly about maybe the year 2001, 2002, leading up to then the surge of malware that we would have seen in 2003 and a little, to a certain extent 2004, this discussion, I was having every year, is it going to happen this year, is it going to happen this year, is it going to happen this year? And, we did see a huge surge basically in 2003, latter half of 2003, early 2004, basically at the end of the day, bar the exception, like ComWarrior, were a series of Trojans that targeted a particular unique sort of feature in the Symbian Series 60 platform that allowed them to in essence run files on reboot, and then it just dropped off. And I think it dropped off because, to to a large degree that the habitat, shall we say, Series 60 itself was replaced or was improved, and you know, people moved on. And then it really got quiet. And
do you think that's though because there wasn't really a great deal of commerce being conducted over mobiles back then, whereas now there is, you know?
That's exactly it. And once again, to go back to what I said at the outset, the imperative is financial. And people, these are the groups or individuals involved in creating malware, are not going to bother themselves, as we would have seen 10 years ago, to prove that this can be done, to write a proof of concept to run on Windows Mobile or whatever. They're not interested in that. They're interested in making money. And if there's not, one, a sufficient population that uses the particular platform to make it worthwhile, and two, if nothing of interest is on that particular platform or the hardware that runs that platform, they're not going to bother themselves. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. There wasn't really anything significant on the phones for people to bother to steal. That, of course, is changing. We're seeing sort of to some degree, the number of platforms on the mobile phone sort of narrowed, and now it's starting to increase again. You've got sort of Palm back in the fray. You've got, of course, Windows Mobile. You've got Symbian still there, and then of course Apple have come into it as well. And people are really using the phones for a hell of a lot more than they would have in the past. And you know, maybe even everyone's not doing their online banking on their iPhone, but they do contain a lot of personal information.
Well, I mean, they are logging into Facebook and things like that, though. And
indeed.
If you can own someone's Facebook account, then you can start saying, "Hey, I'm in London and I got mugged, and send me some money," you know, and all that. Those sort of good scams. So, yeah, no, I really see it as being something.
Yeah,
that is...
it's really picked up as a subject of discussion even prior to Black Hat for about the last 2 to 3 months. I've been asked that question a lot. We haven't thankfully seen too much activity in the wild, but there's certainly a lot of discussion around it. So whether we'll see something in the next 6 months, I doubt it. I think we'll continue to see further, you know, proof of concept. Gee, I was able to do this, or you know, various papers about malicious SMSs and that sort of thing. In the wild, though, I don't know. I would hope not, but I think the chances, certainly with all of the focus that's being paid to the mobile phones as a vector, as a target of attack, will likely mean that we'll probably see some more activity, starting to pick up within the year. Whether it'll increase the, numerically or quantitatively speaking, reach the heights that we would have seen in the latter part of 2003, I doubt it, but I think we will start to see some things crop up in the wild.
So we've got to hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Indeed.
All right, Kevin Hogan, thank you very much for joining us on Risky Business from Dublin.
All right. Thanks a million.